This show is brought to you by MTN. For your everyday moves, try this new MTN app. MTN, SA's best network.
I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show. Now, the show is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit www.mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions. And we thank them for partnering with the show to bring you these great interviews. Now, an announcement last week that really caught my eye was that Nedbank is buying payments fintech Icoca. According to Nedbank, the acquisition, which is worth a considerable 1.6 billion rand, marks a significant milestone in the bank's strategy to target small and medium enterprises. Founded in 2012, Icoca provides mobile point-of-sale solutions to SMEs. Its products include card machines and a mobile app that allows merchants to accept card payments with added business management tools. Icoca was co-founded by Matt Putman, Ramsey Daly, and Clive Putman, with a vision to develop and deliver business tools that can help anyone thrive in business. And I'm quoting there. Matt Putman is joining me now from Durban, and he's the CEO. Matt, it's been a very long time since I last chatted to you. I hope you're well, sir.
It has, Duncan. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show today. It feels like we've gone full circle. I think the first recording I did with you was we just launched Icoca to market probably close to a decade or so ago. So it's great to be back.
That's right. I think we met in a restaurant in Four Ways, if memory serves me, but it was a long time ago now.
Yes, sounds about right.
So it's been quite an adventure, it sounds like, to flip the business now for 1.65 billion. That's a long way from the early startup days when we last spoke. Tell us how this Nedbank deal happened.
It's been, a long time in the making. From our side, we had three main institutional investors, which was Crossfin, who you'll know is kind of one of the main South African fintech focused investors, and then Apus, who are kind of a private equity fund across Asia and Africa, were in DPO, Payfast, etc., and a bunch of other big businesses there in time. The bank group, and then they've got some big investments in Asia as well, and IFC being kind of the three key institutional investors. And as with private equity, these funds have kind of a lifespan and a cycle of when they look to, return capital to their LPs. And we were kind of the last investments in Apus's Fund One, and to proactively manage that as a, as the CEO of the business and as an exec team, we engaged with multiple different people in the markets who we felt would be, good potential strategic partners to, take the business forward and help us as a team kind of deliver the next wave of growth. And Nedbank was one of the parties that we spoke to through our process. We had already, built quite a strong partnership with Nedbank, where we were using their services to do some of our payment processing for our Icoca merchant base, and also using them from a transactional banking perspective within the group. There was a very strong alignment between our vision and their vision of how a business like ours is front-running fintech could, actually combine and complement a very big, mature bank such as Nedbank. And ultimately, we have foreseen and have been building towards, convergence between payments and banking and financial services in the space. The fact that there was strong alignment between the teams on what the future could look like and a good cultural fit in that. I think the people we've dealt with have been very professional and very thoughtful in how they want to bring this transaction to life in the next phase to make sure that they kind of get the best of Icoca. But that was, that was the background, was that it was a change of guard for our kind of institutional investors, which presented us with an opportunity to, try and find a strategic investor that could bring a whole bunch of things to the table that would help the business grow in its next cycle of growth.
Okay. So has Nedbank bought 100% of the business, or the founders? Do the founders retain some shareholding?
They have bought 100% of the business, but I'll be staying on as all the exec team. For kind of the foreseeable future, we've got been incentivized and locked in to deliver growth. And I think for us, that was quite important. As much as it's important for Nedbank, a key thing that they're buying is part of is the leadership team and the expertise and a different way of thinking. For us, it was, and for me specifically, I think it was very important for two reasons. One is spent 13 years building this business, and I want to make sure that we see it through this transition and make sure that we position it in a way where it's going to continue to grow into the future. And secondly, I think there's a bunch of additional opportunities and things that we want to still do with the business that this Nedbank partnership will hopefully allow us to do.
Okay. So the Iqoqa name, that stays in the market, does it? And do you remain an independent business within Nedbank?
Yes, I mean, that's how it's envisioned. We'll be a subsidiary of Nedbank. And again, I guess part of the appeal to us is that from the get-go in the conversations with the Nedbank leadership team, without us, having prompted them at all, from the get-go, they said, look, they respect what the Iqoqa brand and offering has achieved in markets. And they can understand the appeal to the SME base, and they're really not looking to, in any way destroy that brand equity. They want to, in fact, support it and help it continue to grow. So that was key from a brand perspective. And then, in terms of how the business is structured and run again, they have been very complimentary in what we have achieved and are not looking to, mess with that formula, but rather to work with us and help us with the pieces of the puzzle that we don't understand and that they have a lot of expertise in.
Does Nedbank branding come into your brand at all post the acquisition? Does it become something like Iqoqa powered by Nedbank?
We haven't really got there yet, Duncan, to be honest. It's not something that they have, requested. It's the next kind of few months will be a exploratory for us. We've still got to get past the regulatory approvals before we can get to that kind of planning. But
of course,
what would make sense is, in the channels where we're servicing Nedbank customers. So for example, if we were to be able to distribute Iqoqa through Nedbank's branch network, it would make sense, to have that linkage between the two brands, so that the Nedbank customers are aware that whilst Iqoqa is a standalone brand, there is this kind of association with the Nedbank group. I think in the right channels, especially where Nedbank customers are involved, it's something that will probably make sense.
Okay, take us back to the beginning. Why did you start Iqoqa in the first place? What was the vision here? And what were you trying to do when you launched the business?
It's a very long time ago now. I think what we are trying to do is we realized that the small business owners in this country were unable to get access to the payments ecosystem. If you're a small business owner kind of 10, 12 years ago, you actually couldn't get a card machine. The big four banks, were not set up in a way where they would onboard kind of a sole proprietor or a small business. So for us, we wanted to help bring SMEs into that ecosystem, help them accept payments, because we saw it as, a fundamental step in building some sort of digital identity for SMEs, and then giving them access to things like credits and other financial services on the back of that data being moving from the analog world into digital. We also identified that there was at that point kind of quite a big proliferation of mobile phones in South Africa. Android was starting to get good traction, as was iPhone, and we saw that as a unique way to deliver this payment service to SMEs in a very different way to how it had been done before, and a fraction of the cost. of the more traditional heavy face-to-face approach that banks were using for the bigger businesses that they served.
Okay, so it was really about driving down the cost for smaller merchants to be able to transact digitally.
Yeah, driving down the cost and actually just providing access. You know, I think for many people, they just didn't have access. So it was a combination of the two.
Okay. So it sounds like this would have involved a heck of a lot of work on the ground, you know, in townships in all over the country, in small retail operations, spaza shops, et cetera. You guys must have put in a lot of legwork to build this business.
Yeah, a huge amount of blood, sweat, and tears, and I think lots of learnings along the way. Initially, when we started the business, you know, we had looked at the model that had worked in the US, which was a business called Square, founded by Jack Dorsey, who's also one of the founders of Twitter. Yes. You'll know him. And obviously, they had a really good success in that American market of very simplistic digital onboarding, and ultimately scaling a very similar business to ours in America. So the initial thinking was very simplistic, easy digital onboarding, you know, is the way forward, and to use digital as the channel to acquire our customers, and then actually courier card machines to SMEs much as you would, you know, courier a pair of shoes to a consumer via a Superbalist at that time. So that was the initial hypothesis. We started out with digital marketing, but we struggled initially to get traction with that. We had friction in our onboarding process, and there was also, I guess, a lack of brand trust. And this way of acquiring a card machine, almost like a fashion accessory, was, I guess, very novel and in some ways scary to the South African small business owner or consumer. But yeah, over time, we perfected that part of the journey. And we also realized that it was important to complement the digital onboarding channels and the digital acquisition channels with physical channels. So, field sales team kind of across the nation, we partnered with retailers. So Massmart being one of our bigger retail partners, whereby, you know, there's a large portion of this market, you actually want to go and touch and feel a product and see it in the flesh before they buy it. So, you know, we started out, you know, you could go and buy any Corker card machine in game initially, and then we expanded that across macro and builders. I think we've got across the Massmart footprints, as well as some other partners that we have in retail, kind of north of 300, 350 retail stores nationally, where you can actually go and physically buy a card machine and leave being able to take payments. So that was key. And then, over time, we've, I guess, developed other distribution partnerships with either people who have SME customer bases and those customers want to be able to accept payments. For example, banks like Investec, who, don't have their own acquiring value proposition, or Time Bank, where they'll refer customers to us and then, you know, we'll give them the payment solutions to kind of help them run that side of their business. So yeah, it has been, there's been a lot of learnings, I guess, on the distribution side, and the product as well has evolved. We started out trying to solve one very specific pain point, which was helping SMEs accept digital payments with the card machine. And as we got to know these SMEs, you know, we realized actually there's a bunch of other pain points that they have that the traditional banks and other financial service providers were also not really doing a good job at providing them solutions for. And secondly, we realized that because we were sitting on, let's say, the raw trading data of these businesses, we actually had very valuable data in helping, customize other financial service products for SMEs. So the next product in our evolution was our cash advance product that we launched in partnership with Retail Capital, which at the time was a standalone alternate lender. It's now been acquired and part of Time Bank. But it was taking the raw, you know, trading data from these SMEs who generally had no credit history, and using that data in partnership with Retail Capital to, you know, provide a lending solution to give them working capital to grow their business further. And that's been a very successful product. We've distributed kind of north of about 3 billion rands worth of working capital into the hands of SMEs. And that money, you know, it creates jobs, it helps people expand their businesses, etc. And without it, I think, you know, there would be a kind of this gap in that SME ecosystem.
Why do you think the banks were slow to target this, you know, the smaller guys in the market? Was it just a case of they'd become complacent and they were just satisfied with dealing with the bigger retailers and bigger merchants out there, and they didn't see the SME market as a big opportunity? I mean, you weren't the only guys who identified this as an option. There are other players in this market, and I guess we're all racing to grab market share. Why were the banks not focused on this space?
I think it's a multi-layered kind of question and answer. I think that you're correct in saying, you know, they were doing a good job at serving the bigger businesses, the multi-lane retailers, you know, the bigger hotel and hospitality chains. And in those channels where they were providing, I guess, multiple services to those providers, they had quite a high touch servicing approach. So I think, I think part of their challenge was, In banks where I guess there's a very heavy compliance and risk hat that comes into every discussion, it can sometimes be difficult to almost drive innovation through a digital, very light touch approach. So I think that was something that they struggled with, was getting that digital acquisition, digital onboarding, digital support piece right, because it was very different to how they'd serviced bigger customers for this type of product historically. And then I think the other thing, which was, you know, an advantage for us and what some of our competitors, is that, you know, we are bank agnostic brands. So we will onboard any customer irrespective of who they bank with. And I think SMEs, you know, being, I guess, small businesses or being, you know, sole proprietors, they often hadn't had a great experience with banks. There was almost like a little bit of a distrust of the traditional financial ecosystem. And having a bank agnostic brand that kind of resonated with them, was run by, you know, entrepreneurs on, you know, if you look at ourselves and some of our peers, I think that, you know, that combined with the digital piece is what helped brands like ourselves, I guess, scale and perhaps kind of tripped up some of the bigger banks where they continue to focus on where they were doing well in the mid-market to kind of tier one, tier two space.
You mentioned that you have been bank agnostic. Do you stay bank agnostic post-acquisition?
Yes, I think we do, in that, you know, our goal is to serve as many SMEs as possible in the country. Mm-hmm. And we want them to have choice. We don't want to limit access to our ecosystem. But, you know, obviously we want to figure out, well, how do we work with Nedbank to provide other services to our SME base that ultimately, you know, helps grow Nedbank's share of that SME banking space, and overlay that in a way that, I guess, is true to our very simplistic interface with SME. So I think we'll continue to service SMEs irrespective of who they bank with. But, you know, it's our job to make sure that we build a value proposition that they can opt into for other services, that ultimately, hopefully, you know, is net-net value creative to the Nedbank SME base as well.
Yes. I mentioned there are other players in this market who chase the same opportunity. I think everyone knows the brand Yoko. You guys are a very strong brand in the space. There are others as well that all competed for this market. Post this acquisition, do you think this is going to trigger a consolidation of these players? Do you think other banks are now going to go out and start looking for other players to buy? Do you think we're going to see a wave of consolidation here driven by the banks?
Yeah, I think there's probably two different elements to consolidation. I think that what we've seen is almost like you're seeing kind of the convergence between payments players and let's say banking services. So I think that you'll see convergence in that sense, which I think there already has been some consolidation that started to happen. If you look at Lusaka, you know, Lusaka bought the Connect Kazang. Business. They bought it, Kazang. Connect, well, Kazang is, I guess, one of the brands under the Connect umbrella or banner. And then recently bought Adumo as well. So I think, you know, part of their big play is consolidation. I also bought the Gar point to sell business as part of that Adumo transaction. Yeah, and I think this is, you know, hopefully a very positive marker in that it's, I think the other banks, you know, they will need to react in some way. And I hope that it has a positive impact on the ecosystem and that we see, you know, a bit more deal flow and we see, you know, hopefully some of the other banks or even Nedbank doing follow-on transactions if it makes sense. But yeah, I think there is, it has been quite fractured, and it is it is natural that there will be some additional consolidation to be expected over the coming years. And I guess for us as well, we'd like to be ahead of the curve on consolidation so that potentially, you know, we can help shape what that looks like.
You mentioned in the joint press release that you issued with Nedbank that one of the opportunities you're hoping to explore now is to expand in markets outside South Africa. I presume that we'll be looking at markets where Nedbank also operates, which I imagine is in the Southern African region. What is the opportunity there for you?
Yeah, it's still very early days, and it's something that we plan to unpack with the Nedbank leadership team over the coming months. I guess a definitive answer. I mean, what I do know is that obviously they have licensing and presence in the SADC region. They're doing quite a good job in Mozambique as well, from what I understand. And per their latest earnings report and the exit kind of just post our transaction on the EcoBank side, there is a definite ambition to build out their East African footprints. So, yeah, I guess for us, it's... it will be a combination of working with them to understand what they see as the strategic markets, where if you take payments and you combine that with banking for SMEs, it kind of is complementary to their strategy. And I think the other thing which, you know, the Nedbank team has kind of alluded to is that, you know, business like this is, it can be quite a good business to almost lead into a market with, where it's quite light touch, and it will give you kind of, you know, it will give you early data on what that economy looks like, what sort of traction you can get with the payments piece. And then potentially, you know, you could follow with banking or lending, et cetera, which obviously come with, I guess, much bigger compliance and regulatory requirements. So yeah, we don't have a clear plan yet. But it's definitely something that I guess both teams are keen to explore, and we also want to probably just find the right markets and try go deep in that market to kind of validate that what we've built can be taken outside of SA.
Matt, just lastly, before I let you go, there's a lot happening in the fintech space in South Africa. We know the Reserve Bank is doing a lot of work. We've seen the launch of Rapid Payments. We've seen PayShap launched in this market. I think the PayShap launch has been a little bit disappointing. Where's all of this going? How do you see this market evolving in the next few years? And how do you see that impacting the space that you operate in?
It's a very tricky question to answer, Duncan, and I wish I had the crystal ball. But look, I think that RPP and Rapid Payments, as you said, it has had a bit of a softer launch and traction than everyone had kind of hoped. From our perspective, you know, we very much, I guess, focused on the SME and the small business side. And if there is another payment type that gets traction that merchants, you know, want to be able to accept, such as RPP, then we must be able to help them accept that payment type as we had done historically with QR. I think that what we'll see happen is that fintechs will probably get a seat at the table, and they'll have better access on the back of the work that the Saab is doing to the key payments ecosystem. Banking ecosystem as well. I think there will probably be some more consolidation between banking and fintech. And I hope that we, if the Saab can get their, finalize their approach correctly and take into, you know, take heed of the feedback they've got from the ASAP. ASAP is a kind of an association that's been formed in this last year by ourselves and the other leading fintech brands, Lasaka, Yoko, Shop2Shop, Peach Payments. So there's a very long list. I'm not going to cover them all. The Hello Group, but basically all of the non-fintechs, Network International and others. So I think, you know, there's been good dialogue from the let's call it the non-banking side of payments and fintech with the Saab. And we hope that helps them, I guess, get to a point where they have a framework that they can put into action fairly soon that increases access for non-banks to the ecosystem and ultimately helps fintechs, you know, be able to provide services to both SMEs and consumers, that we can drive more digital adoption in the markets and crack some of the use cases that have remained very stubbornly as cash-based, you know, use cases. So I think that's, yeah, I think over the coming years, we'll hopefully see some of the barriers drop, some of the, some of the stubborn cash-based behavior start to change as you see a bigger acceptance growth. And I think there'll probably be some consolidation where some of the, you know, players will have to kind of join forces to be around for the next wave of growth.
Congratulations again on the deal. Matt Putman is a co-founder and CEO of iCorka. It's good to see you again, and thanks for chatting with Tech Central.
Likewise, Duncan, and yeah, thanks for running a great show, and it's been great to speak to you again.